And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Lights out and away we ayo. Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Network, a fine network. I'm your host, J.E. Skeets, filling in for my hot boy, Trey Kirby, who's still on vacation. But I'm joined by our local F1 expert, a man who didn't start drinking water until like 2006, Graydon Gordian.
What's up, F1 sickos?
Is that true?
I just feel like, do you go back to your college years, your high school years, and you remember drinking lots of water?
No.
I mean, because I literally was thinking about it. It's like, I played football in high school. You'd be at football in Texas. It'd be very, very hot. You'd be in pads. You'd be just sweating unbelievably. And then you'd go over to, you know, a little orange tank and get those little plastic cone cups and have like exactly one of them. And that was rehydrating. And then go back, right? You know, it's like that's not even close to what I think is an appropriate amount of water.
No, it's not. It's not. So what was going on?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, maybe I took a lot of years off my life and I just don't realize it. Maybe you're just young and you can power through. In college, I definitely feel like I mostly subsisted on like coffee, Gatorade, and beer.
Beer, yeah. But you've added water to your life.
I do drink water now. Good. I do drink water now. I enjoy a nice, refreshing glass of water.
All right. He's hydrated and ready to go. And over yonder, we got our team principal making the magic happen, JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to everybody joining us live on YouTube. The Slipstream is strong. Yes, that's what it's called on No Breaks. Drop us a thumb, a comment, subscribe here to No Breaks. And if you're a listener of the podcast, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. It really helps us out. Helps people find the show. A lot of new F1 fans still coming into the space.
And that's who we're here for. That's who we're here for. More than anyone. It's for everybody. This is a show for everyone.
It is.
Fans of all stars.
It is. You are the expert, like I said off the top, and I am really the noob still when it comes to this stuff.
But that's beautiful. I love it because we've talked about this before on the show, but when I first started watching F1, which probably is like 8 or 9 years ago now, an incredibly solitary activity. I mean, like sitting around by myself on Sunday mornings, sometimes tweeting about it and getting like somewhere between like zero, maybe like maximum like one likes on a tweet about it. Just like tweeting truly into an empty theater. It was sad times. I'm glad.
So you're
to have
liking
fun.
This now?
No, this like, is more
survive,
fun. It is more fun to have like friends and people care and want to talk about this, and we're just made it as much more fun for this to not be like something I do on an island.
Good. Well, I'm excited here to learn a lot from what just went down with the Austrian Grand Prix, and looking ahead to the next race. And I think we're at the halfway point.
We are at the
halfway
point
of the F1 season too. So I'm sure we'll have some questions about that, looking back and looking forward. I can't believe this is the show I got though, with Trey being gone. Because I, of course, get the one podcast or the 1 week where we also have a sprint race.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a second race to, get the highlights in, try and do my little research for
it. You're gonna nail it. You are not the number one F1 fan in your household.
No.
But that means you do have a lot of people in your life who are, you know, helping, you know, helping to understand, there to talk about things.
There were a lot of questions over the last 24 hours so, to my wife, Nora, who is, in our household, yes, a diehard F1 fan. In fact, in asking a lot of these questions, I was a little concerned. I'm like, how do you know all this? She's really up to date on everything and all the breaking news and stuff like that.
There are no two ways about it. Nora knows a ton about Formula One. I mean, last time we were hanging out.
Such an expert. I'm around her all the time. I guess when she's just looking at her phone, she's like breaking down the latest F1 race.
Yeah. She is, I mean, as knows as much as like any other friend of mine. Like truly, wow, like wow, they're like, well, she knows a ton. Compliment. She knows a ton about it.
She does. She does. Yeah. So she will be judging me specifically on how I do here on No Break City. Okay, so let's get into it because we do have qualifying on Friday. Obviously, the sprint race on Saturday, then the race there on Sunday. Just some quick facts about the Austrian Grand Prix. This is the Red Bull Ring.
The Red Bull Ring,
and it's very very short.
It is short.
When I saw it, I was like, that's it. There's like felt like there was four turns.
Yes,
I know there's more than that, but it's you know, it's very very in length, just like very short. There's 10 corners, I think. On the,
yeah, it's only 10 corners. Yeah. It's right. It's, you know, it's still longer than Monaco, but you know, only by a tiny bit.
Really,
it's on the very very short end.
Are you a fan of a shorter track like this, where it's like takes like, what, 70 seconds to get around, or some of the longer ones? Like, do you like the, like a ballpark, you like them all to be different? You
know? I do think it's fun that they're all different. Yeah. I think the ballpark analogy is fun. My favorite track of the year is Spa, which is also probably the longest of the year. Okay. Although I don't know if it's the length is why I love it.
Okay.
But there, you know, it's a good question. It definitely makes for a weirder race because you have people like catching people a lot. You have the situations where it's like, and the guy who comes in fifth has been lapped or something like that, right? Because it's so short, which is always like a little awkward that so many people have been overtaken. But I still think it's a fun course because this is a particularly intense one because there's so many DRS zones.
Right.
Like there's three DRS zones on a 2.5 mile track, meaning that there are a lot of places where you can be overtaken in a very, very short period
of time. And correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like the elevation changes drastically in this one, which
massively.
I think looks really cool on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Where they come like ripping into corners, either going down or up and stuff like that.
I think actually elevation changes are probably one of the more under-discussed track elements.
Right.
You know, because it has a lot to do with it affects car power a lot, and it just can affect a lot of elements of the setup, which I think is super fascinating. But yeah, it is a beautiful venue for sure, like in like the Austrian Alps with these big sweeping shots. I like it as a venue, partly because I love any venue where it's like when they pan out and do the helicopter shot, it just looks epic.
Oh yeah.
I'm always a fan.
Yeah. But the one thing with this course, as we learn through these 3 days of racing, are track limits. That's a common issue. And again, that's straight up just going off the track. And why is that happening if these guys are professional drivers?
So basically, so it's also being managed a little differently than it used to in years past. Okay. And we certainly saw that, which is that they used to identify track limits in specific areas where they said you would gain an advantage. So notably, like in Austria, 9 and 10, turns 9 and 10 are common areas where you might be able to take the track at a wider angle and then enter the main straight at a higher velocity and gain a little bit of advantage there. And they're basically saying, no, that's like going out of bounds in basketball or something.
Yeah.
You can't like do that to get an advantage, you know, so you got to stay within the lines, which means keeping all four tires in lines. You can literally have three of the four off the track. You can be right on the edge, but if the fourth one dips over and there's any space in between, you're off the track. They've since changed the rules such that they're going to now increasingly monitor that at basically every point along the track. They're not picking specific corners. They're saying that's a universal rule, and I can't tell you exactly why people had such a hard time with that this weekend, but my gosh, that it was a near constant factor across every single day was people's inability to keep it within inside the line.
Right. So then so many times just being changed because of penalties.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, people having times thrown away all the time or getting penalties in the race or whatever. It was a constant theme of the weekend. I think it honestly just shows you how on the edge they all are, how much they are trying to optimize every single lap down to centimeters, inches, you know, incredibly small margins. And to mess it up even the littlest bit is costing them, but that's how exacting they are trying to be every single time out. And at some point you have to ask yourself if it's costing you in the ways it's costing you. There's a cost-benefit analysis there that maybe is worth questioning. So
the qualifying for this week here in Austria, it was setting the grid for Saturday's sprint race. And I know there's a little twist here, and Nora helped me out with this. Unlike last year, the winner of the sprint picks up 8 points instead of 5, while points are now allocated to the top eight finishers rather than just top three. This is only the second year we've been trying this sprint race.
Correct.
Okay, so we're showing you here, if you're in the slipstream, you're watching on YouTube, the results from qualifying, though you could scratch the Perez there in fourth. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is how they ended on. This is how they ended from qualifying, but as we would learn after the race, they actually, Perez had gone off the track supposedly fairly flagrantly at the end of Q2.
Right.
And they basically canceled that lap, canceled all of his Q3 laps, and moved him back to P13,
okay,
which is where he would have started if you had only counted his penultimate Q2 lap.
Gotcha.
So he ends up starting in P13 on Saturday. It moves Gasly up into 10th, I believe, and everybody else on that graphic just a moment ago who was behind him shifts up one spot.
Okay, so qualifying Max 1, P1 there, Leclerc P2, and then Sainz P3.
Yep, correct.
As JD chucks it back up there. So what were you taking from qualifying here?
I mean, this is honestly one of the – there's a few big takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, an amazing qualifying at the very top. They're separated by a tenth,
yeah,
of a second. That's basically faster than you can snap your fingers. It's incredible to think that they would all drive, you know, 2.5 miles and then finish in
it
exactly
is crazy when you put it that
time.
Way.
You, yeah, know, it's like that. So that is really wild, and it has something that has happened in the past. This isn't unprecedented, but we haven't actually seen a ton of this year. Such narrow margins. Mercedes had great pace on Friday and totally threw it away because they put both cars in the wall.
Right.
You know, Lewis Hamilton and George Russell.
In separate incidents.
In separate, yeah, totally separate, yeah, incidents. This ends up costing Lewis way more than George, who still ends up starting fourth because of Perez getting knocked down and you know, his other people don't end up surpassing him. But Hamilton almost certainly would be starting higher than this, mm-hmm, given how he had looked. And the other one, big takeaway for me is both Alpine and Haas, the other two teams, you know, that are represented here, you know, the Haases are looking so strong.
Ooh, the Haas is hot.
Oh my gosh, they look incredible heading into Saturday. And Alpine, we've talked a lot about in recent weeks on the show, is increasingly looking like they're in control of their own destiny to take fourth in the Constructors' Championship. And lo and behold, they put two cars in Q3. They look really strong. So it certainly starts to set the stage for, like, who is going to be most competitive out there later in the weekend.
The other – only other, I should say, note I had from qualifying is that McLaren struggled. And we heard from Norris saying he was afraid of breaking the car.
Yeah, and they
that's never something you want to hear.
Norris definitely had the yips out there. He seemed really concerned about the car under braking. Ricardo had yet another catastrophic qualifying, dropping out in Q1. This is really not something that I think anybody anticipates. It kind of bleeds into what has been a rough week for Ricardo. We'll talk about that more later in the show, but it's definitely yet another bad day in a season full of bad days for Danny Ric.
Mm.
So,
okay, well, let's go to the sprint on Saturday. A hectic start to this one. We had Alonso's car had the tire covers left on it during the formation lap. And so he wasn't able to start. He had to be taken to the pits and then ultimately retired. What was going on there first before we move on?
I tried to find what was going on there. I looked it up. I'm not sure why the best thing I could find was some evidence on the broadcast that there was an electrical issue they were trying to solve and therefore they were still working on that and they didn't take the covers off. But I think at the time that was a little bit speculative. It was amidst the mania of the, you know, the pre-start grid. I never saw like a definitive follow-up on that. If anybody in the Slipstream team knows, let us know. But
right.
At the end of the day.
But the idea is that at some point, you know, the clock hits zero, step away from the car.
Yeah.
Hands down, you know, like that. And
there is a clear time where you can't be aiding the car
right.
any longer, right? And the tire blankets are doing that, right? They're keeping the tires up to temperature.
Yep.
So they've got to come off. And everybody has to do that at – they don't have to do it at the exact same moment, but there is a final moment at which they have to do that or they're gaining an unfair advantage. So this is also yet another – for me, the big takeaway here is just yet another weekend in which Alpine looks so strong and then just is a little bit snake bit. They are their right. own worst enemy here. The car looks so great. Both drivers are driving well, and they're leaving points on the board because they keep having these mishaps, these reliability issues, these peculiar pre-start problems. It's they could be comfortably in fourth right now were it not for all these strange hiccups right. that they just seemed unable to avoid.
Also here, again, sort of around the start, Joe's Alfa Romeo engine died at the end of the formation lap, causing an aborted start to the race, and he started from the pit. There's a lot going on before this race.
It was incredibly weird. A lot of people were tweeting about it, how it's like, this is an insane sprint race. They hadn't even started racing yet. It's like right. so many things were going. Normally, you don't see that many things go wrong on the formation lap. It's a fairly, thoughtless exercise. You just drive around in a circle
just get
and then
formation.
Get in formation.
Yeah,
it'd be like a bunch of things going wrong, like before the tip of a basketball game. It's like, when was
oh,
the last
I guess it's
time?
Like, yeah, like, there's like a leaky roof or yeah, something yeah, like that. Yeah, or yeah, yeah. Players'
somebody
warm-ups
like,
won't come off.
Yeah,
or
somebody
something.
Trips and like kind of twist their ankle or something as
right.
they're like walking over.
Yeah.
Or
I guess it happens every once in a while,
guess,
but
yeah.
pretty rare here. With,
pretty rare here.
Two incidents with two different cars there, two different teams, I should say. So the actual race did happen. The sprint race. JD, I know you got the results here for us. Again, everyone on YouTube, check it out. Shout out to the F1 like YouTube page. The work that the videos that they put up and like just the graphics and everything, they're slick.
Cool. Yeah,
I just love
for sure.
I love the aesthetic of F1. I like their font and all that. I know that sounds weird, but I really do like it.
It's a good graphics package.
So
sure.
So Max gets the 8 points here in the sprint race. Charles coming in second, Sainz there, so 2-3 for Ferrari, and you see the rest of it. I won't go through the entire thing, but I am not the biggest fan, I'm going to say, of the sprint race. I think I've decided Ooh. That. I know it's we're only like 5 in total over these last 2 seasons or something, but I don't like it. I'm not sure anyone, I don't think the drivers care for it all that much or the teams, and it's like there's something weird about it that I'm not a fan of.
We talked about your wife. My wife, Taryn, also hates it.
Okay.
Every time it comes up, she's like, this is so dumb. She thinks that she's almost angry about
yeah.
it. She's like, I don't want to. She watches every race with me. She loves it. She like walks out of the room
yeah.
for the sprint race. She's like, this is dumb. I don't care.
Max like scrapping with the Ferraris off the start. Like things happened in it, but
to me, it's like a solution in search of a problem. You know, it's like the qualifying to me is actually very fun. I enjoy the time-based qualifying. So to me, it's not something that actively needs to be improved
right.
upon. I get F1's interest in extending kind of the competitive window, having more televised events that have something at stake. That's basically what this is all about, right? This is a dollars and cents move. It's not, to me, about meaningfully improving the televised product, because I think that too often what you just see is it ends up being a corrective against the weird, wacky things that happen in qualifying. You see Lewis put it into a wall, and then he's able to work his way back up the grid. Or you see Perez go off the track, get disqualified from Q3, but he's able to work his way all the way back to P5.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that to me is a lame thing about it. There is some excitement in this one. I mean, the most exciting part of this by far in terms of on track racing was Lewis Hamilton and Mick Schumacher going at it
yeah.
for several laps in a row. That was really awesome racing and was incredible stuff from Mick, who's obviously going toe-to-toe, with one of the all-time greats and hanging in there. His defense was excellent. And as he was saying, if they had swapped the cars around and let him get past Magnussen, whom he seemingly had pace and a pace advantage over, Lewis might have never taken him.
Right.
Part of the only reason Lewis was able to was breathing down his neck is because he was struggling to get past K-Mag. The other takeaway that I had from Saturday was, I don't feel that great about Ferrari's chances on Sunday. Max kind of took off.
Yep.
He looked pretty comfortably in front. I get Leclerc was kind of hunting him down there at the end. He was gaining back some of that advantage. Seems like he had been nursing his tires. But Perez made huge gains during that race. The Red Bull looked strong. And while Ferrari maybe has a strategic advantage starting 2 and 3, I just don't know if they have it. However, Charles Leclerc felt very differently. Coming out of that on Saturday, his comments were very, very confident. He was like, yeah, we'll get him tomorrow. We've got this. We've got this figured out. Which struck me as very peculiar. I thought that was very odd that he was so calm and confident that like they had it figured out and they would nail it on Sunday. Because to me, it looked like, Red Bull. Unless something goes awry for Red Bull.
They've got it.
You know, it's like something's got to go wrong for Verstappen for him to lose this.
Also in this, my only other note, Gasly, I think it was, trying to overtake Hamilton there. In the first turner, they got, you know, wheels clipped and out goes, I guess it was Gasly, right?
Yeah. This is like Gasly, more. You're talking about how the drivers don't like it. Gasly must hate these sprint races. he has had a bunch of catastrophes at them. He got at that, was it at Monza last year? You know, he got knocked out. He started, I think, in the top 10 and then ended up getting, you know, crashing out of the sprint race and then starting last in the race. This is one of many instances in a sprint race where things have gone terribly for him and he started in a much worse position than he started.
On Sunday. Have a chance to like in watching the highlights and listening to the drivers react to the sprint race. Hamilton was like, that was all his fault. Now, of course he's going to say
they
that.
They always say
that. They're always going to say that. I do love how they do that. They always say when two cars clip or whatever, it's always the other guy's fault in terms of where they're coming in.
I gave
stuff
him
like
enough
that.
Space. Oh my God, he turned in on me. Whatever. That's always.
But it was Hamilton sort of over the radio in this incident. And I think there was another one on Sunday, maybe involved Vettel, but it felt like it was an older driver. And I heard twice this weekend in watching these clips, like the older guys, the OGs say like, what are these guys doing?
Yeah.
As in these like younger guys, like he had room. You're just going to hit me here. I have nowhere to go with my car. I just thought it was fascinating.
It's interesting. I wonder whether you're right. I mean, Hamilton and Vettel, who did also say that in his incident. It's interesting. There has been some questions. Has the risk tolerance of the younger guys actually gone up because the cars have gotten meaningfully safer? They've largely raced in an era where really serious injury or death is not common, is almost, you know, is fairly absent from the sport, not completely absent, but far less frequent than it was in prior generations. And has it kind of changed their attitude and aggressiveness and the sort of stuff they're willing to pull? That being said, it's not to their advantage to run into somebody. It's at best a 50-50. Like, I mean, there's probably, you know, I don't know what the likelihood, exact percentage likelihood of crashing out if you hit somebody else is, but it's not normally advised.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's go to Sunday's race. All right. Again, Red Bull Ring. We had the championship leader, Max Verstappen. He's starting on pole in front of a large Dutch contingent Austrian GP. But Ferrari's Leclerc, he passed him like three separate times in this race to win the first time in a long time, something like 3 months. And JD, you can throw it up there. We see the final results. So yes, Charles strikes back here. Ferrari gets the win in Austria. Max coming in second. Lewis Hamilton back on the podium for the second week in a row. George, consistent George. Ooh. He's always there.
Always there.
Just flirting around the same spot, it feels like, every race, you know, 3, 4, 5, something like that. And the rest of them. Do you have a favorite pass from Charles Leclerc in the three times he passed Verstappen?
For me, it's probably the first one, the lap 12 overtake, because it seemed like he caught him sleeping.
Yeah.
It was like, it honestly, I don't think, I mean, he kind of caught the producers sleeping too. I mean, it seemed like nobody like thought he was gonna try to overtake him there, and then like suddenly he had. It also for me was, I think it was just my favorite. So it was partly that. Partly was my favorite because it was the one that had the most drama. Because to be quite honest, Leclerc's ability to just, Leclerc has passed Max on track in his career. But what he has struggled to do is pass him and then just drive away from him. Like oftentimes a fight ensues, Max overtakes him back. You know, it's very infrequently does he just take him and then drive off, which he kind of did in this instance. And the latter ones, which are genuinely very good, very solid, kind of clean overtakes, But there was almost a lack of drama to them. It, mm-hmm. They felt inevitable by the time they came up. He was just crushing Max's times on mush fresher tires in every instance and just flies on past him. Max barely even puts up a fight for the later ones, which was kind of wild to see. It's definitely a total 180 from the sort of what we've seen on track earlier this year.
So Ferrari gets the win in this race, Leclerc does, but it feels like, and you're a Ferrari fan, there's still disappointment because of what happened with Carlos Sainz
his
car and his engine catching on fire and having to retire, and it looked like it should have been a 1-2 victory in Austria.
Yeah, probably for the second weekend in a row, what, with, you know, 20 or 15 laps left, you would have said, well, this is a Ferrari 1-2 almost certainly somehow ends up with only one of them on the podium. In this instance, kind of, you know, both wins, but incredible. It's they're the only people who know how to win races and yet still have, like, kind of a shadow cast over the weekend. But it's just a lot of, I don't know. It's in this instance, it's different things. If it's not strategy, this weekend they seem to nail the strategy. But if it's not strategy, it's reliability. If it's not reliability, it's strategy. It's just very few weekends where they seem every single piece of the puzzle starts to come together. And honestly, it was a tense race even for us Leclerc fans, because for the last several laps, he was struggling with a throttle issue that it was uncertain how that was going to play out. Were they going to ask him to retire the car because it was unsafe to drive? Was he going to be unable to handle it? He was absolutely losing lap time to Max, not at a fast enough clip, but what again seemed like an assured win for the last five laps was thrown into doubt. So it for what felt like should have been a comparatively stress-free race for a Ferrari fan, they found ways to make hard.
Here's a question, because I saw some, you know, chatter about Leclerc getting on the radio talking about the throttle issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just said, like, if it gets too dangerous, they're going to hopefully protect their driver and call him in. Of course, they want the win and all that. Can the FIA, like...
Yeah, the stewards can also say the car is unsafe to drive.
So if that's true, what you're saying it is, that, you know, you almost want... Again, no one wants to get injured, but, like... You don't want Leclerc saying this over the radio, because then it's like,
I think Brundle, I can't remember if it was Brundle or Crofty, but, you know, one of the guys calling the race alluded to that they need to be careful what they say over the radio, because, you know, the stewards are listening and they might call the car in and call him out. And that's not negotiable. It's like, they, you know, it's
he can't
not,
drop like a psych.
Yeah. It's like if they tell you to retire the car for safety reasons, so that they don't tend, you know, you saw that in recent weeks where you've seen that before. They've forced people to come into the pits and address something. I'm trying to think of the last time the stewards had to call a car in because it was unsafe to drive. Normally the team will make that call well before a higher power has to get involved. So if Leclerc could handle it, and he was putting in lap times, you know, he never had an instance where he went off the track.
Right.
He never had an instance where he was kind of psychologically struggling or verbalizing a struggle, but nothing about the car looked especially dangerous. And he was putting in lap times that were representative of the rest of the track. So I would have been a little surprised at that, you know, because if so many other things seem normal, I mean, you know, but it was scary though.
Yeah. Well, and also scary. Yeah. The Carlos Sainz fire. But you're saying if Carlos is like just keeps driving and it's on fire, he's like, I'm fine.
Well,
let's keep going. He'll call him in.
It was a couple years ago. Remember that? I mean, this is a really rare instance because it happened on the very last lap, but where Lewis Hamilton's tire blew up and he finished the race on three tires with his car dragging on the ground, shooting off sparks. That is throwing off pieces of the car, inarguably unsafe driving conditions for other drivers, for Lewis, whatever. But that also... What does it even mean to call the car into the pits at that point? He was 300 meters from the end of the race or something.
If there is 20 laps to go, then
he would have never finished. Yeah. For sure. But in this instance, that still is a bit unlike anything I've ever seen in F1 personally, in bringing the car across with only three tires. But and it does, I guess it does happen from time to time. Luckily, it didn't hear, and I do think that was the right call. It's like Leclerc had control of the car.
You know? JD, I think you have some photos of Carlos's fire here to his engine, which, when you see this, like he That's him in the car there. That's not him crouching down beside the car. Here's another angle from behind. Like, that's an inferno right there. And I know this, the broadcast, they always have a tough decision, right? Like, they'll show us it. And then at a certain point, I think, like, the director's got to go, like,
Do we need to cut away?
This might be too dangerous.
Yeah, if something gets messy, gets ugly or unsafe, you know. Yeah, for sure.
Now, Carlos, of course, is fine. He had some comments about, like, how long it took to sort of
help
him out.
Which I kind of thought as well. There were people around, marshals around, you know, and they didn't spring into action quite at the pace I thought they would, especially because they're the ones with the fire extinguishers. It was a complicated situation because of the fire. I'm not exactly sure why, but he couldn't get the car kind of into park.
Yeah, it was like sort of going downhill.
Rolling backwards, back towards the track. You know, that seemed like a mess. It definitely was a complicated moment. I'm glad everybody's fine. I'm sure the FIA will, like with any of those incidents, look into it. But I thought... I'll just say this. I mean, I'm not going to throw blame around, but I get where Sainz is coming from. Mm-hmm. I, in real time, had the same reaction. Like, gosh, it's taking them a while to get over there and help him, given the severity of the situation.
Sure. So, but he's okay.
He's okay.
The car is not.
He's fine. But he's the car is not.
Yeah. No, it looked crazy. Do you want me to go to awards next and sprinkle in more about this race?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So let's just start with most surprising from... the Austrian Grand Prix.
I think the most surprising. Well, I think there's a couple of surprises.
Give me your nominees.
You know, Daniel Ricciardo ending up in the points is surprising.
Okay.
After a car that's looked shaky, a driver that hasn't looked confident, you know, fighting his way back up into the top 10 is inarguably a little bit surprising. I wouldn't have anticipated that. Haas in general, in a good way. They definitely surprised me. They felt good about the car this weekend, but you know they haven't really brought a lot of upgrades to the car. They've been basically sticking with a very consistent car over the course of the year, where most of the teams have been bringing a lot of upgrades. And that is actually seemingly paying dividends with the driver's comfort level with the car. They've been able to really hone in and feel really, really good about, you know, the four wheels beneath them, and that's been huge for them. They just looked incredible. I mean, honestly, the Haas team, they looked so racy. They were out there battling, throwing their elbows around with teams that look much faster than them at other points in the season. That was awesome to see.
I feel like they've become like everyone's second favorite team,
right? For sure.
Or even a lot of people's favorite team, the underdogs that are maybe new to the sport. It feels like that, at least on Twitter.
Think of like a good like NBA comparison, but who's somebody who was like really, really down and out, and then when they made their comeback, like everybody just
You know what? It's different because of so many people reaching out to us, knowing we were Raptors fans. But it felt like when the Raptors suddenly got great with Kawhi and all that.
And people were
cheering for them, obviously never having a title, not having a lot of success, not even making the finals, and then, you know, going up against the mighty Warriors and all. I feel like there's maybe some comparison.
I also think it's actually not a bad comparison because while the scale of it's a little different, Haas as an American team and the Raptors as a Canadian team.
Oh, that's a good point.
There is kind of that, like, the outsider looking in on the rest of the culture of the sport and people liking that fact about them. People actually – that is the reason a lot of people like Haas, is because they're this weird, scrappy American upstart that does things a little differently than a lot of other people and is just trying to figure it out. And people love that about them. So it's – and I think there's certain vibes on the Raptors as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So – yeah, I was going to say, if they ever win one of these races in the final 11, be it Kevin, be it Mick, maybe it'll be like Marc Gasol drinking a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Skull the wine.
Honestly, for them, I think the real – I mean, win is – that would be
– podium, though?
Wow. Podium is what I think you want.
Do you think it's possible, too?
I do think it's possible because I think there are days where they look like – Kevin Magnussen said this in a recent episode of Beyond the Grid that he was on. He was talking about how on any given weekend we can be the seventh fastest car on the grid, i.e. we're the best car other than the three traditional powerhouses, and even then there's weekends where we look like we can maybe equal the pace of Mercedes.
We could hang
with Mercedes,
right?
And you don't need that many things to go wrong for people above you to then find your way to a podium.
Like, sure.
There have
especially
been
if those teams are fighting each other and battling.
Yeah, totally. Like, things can start to go awry. You just, there's a late, you know, there's a late crash between Verstappen and Leclerc, and then there's a convenient quick pit stop right. for a Haas, and then suddenly they're up at the front of the grid. This is how Gasly got his win at Monza, you know, where, you know, in an AlphaTauri, right?
Yep.
Which had no business kind of winning races that year. None of the people really on the podium in that race were all that competitive in terms of the title fight or anything like that, right? So I think it's crazier things have happened for sure. Would I bet on it? No. But they're absolutely, if they can have weekends like this, they'll put themselves in a position to walk through the door when the time comes.
Okay, well, let's stay positive here for a second. What was the best moment on the track?
I mean, it's definitely got to be the five-way fight
You
saw between, was it Norris, Zhou, Alonso, and both Haases.
Yeah,
Magnussen
okay, yeah,
and Schumacher
yeah.
were the five guys battling out there. And that was great action. That was like super... That was the promise of this season, and the closer racing and the ground effect and the lack of reliance on certain top of car aerodynamic components, like coming to fruition. This is what we want, which is like bunches of guys battling back and forth and doing racing hard, but racing safely. Really very unclear who was going to come out on top of that.
That looked crazy.
It was crazy.
To see five bunched like that going into turns.
And it was crazy. It was a great moment. And I honestly, hopefully the type of thing that as they continue to iterate on these regulations in years to come, something that they'll be able to like will manifest itself more and more often.
We got a Twitter question from Jay Fisher about that five-car fight there. And like what you're saying, was this only possible because of these new regulations from last year? And because we didn't see this, of course, last season.
You didn't see it as much last season. There's like one or two moments. I remember like famously at the most recent French Grand Prix, there was an instance where you saw a bunch of, you know, cars battling towards the end. You had Ricciardo going really wide, or that famous famous call from Crofty about at Spa a few years there where they're four wide, you know, coming down the main straight and there. But that really, those were instances where they're largely on a straight and it's
yeah.
a wide moment, and they kind of like all get alongside each other and who's going to come out on top in this race to the braking zone. It's not this extended through turns thing, and it's really about the turns and the amount of aerodynamic downforce you need to make it at speed through a turn, and the fact that the other cars aren't disrupting that
much.
That is the real key to this, and that is where I think you saw this was a little different, because they were bunched up through multiple turns. They were kind of fighting back and forth. So I do think this was – it's not that we've never seen anything about it, but it was unique and uniquely cool, and hopefully something we'll see a lot more of.
Most disappointing – at the Austrian Grand Prix?
Probably AlphaTauri.
Okay.
I mean, both of their cars, again, finishing out of the points. Just in general, I think having a brutal season after what looked like coming into the year, you thought they might be up there with there was a world where we might have said, oh, okay, maybe Alpine and McLaren, you know, maybe the other team that's wiggled their way up into that fight is AlphaTauri. It's just been nothing like that. You're having a rough year for Gasly, who at times last year looked like the best driver, not in a top car.
Yeah.
You know,
I was all
like
in on
Gasly. Looked like a top five guy, has just not shown that brilliance this year. Yuki has improved, but hasn't made a huge leap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still is prone to outbursts, still is prone to on-track mistakes. You know, has made contact with his teammate even. You know, these things are really problematic, and it's definitely just, I don't know, for me they're a team they got to get it together, they got to figure something out, because they feel like they're taking huge steps backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then the best award here on No Breaks, I just wrote down, who gets the Graydon Gordian Full Beans Award in Austria?
So there are a couple candidates here, but I think there's one clear one. I think Charles Leclerc is a candidate. I mean, he drives great, overtaking Max three times, handling the car at the end. There's so many great instances in F1 history. Senna has a couple. Daniel Ricciardo at his Monaco victory, where something goes wrong with the car and kind of has this just superhero moment where he manages to bring it home and win a race nonetheless. That's a great one. Lewis Hamilton on the podium for the third week in a row, another great week. But for me, it's inarguably it's Mick Schumacher.
Oh.
Who he just looks great. This is Mick Schumacher's best race in Formula One, and by a wide margin. By a wide margin. Like, he was awesome. It's his second points in a row after going his entire career without any points until Silverstone. It's his second points race in a row, but also just he looked great out there. It's the first race to me where he inarguably looked much quicker than his teammate, which this year hasn't been the case. Prior years so, but, you know, to be faster than F1 vet Kevin Magnussen is no easy feat, but he's battling with people, he's defending, he's overtaking, he's going wheel to wheel with former F1 champions. He looked awesome. He looked unintimidated, he looked confident, and he looked in complete control of the car. And now he's got double digit points on the season, after going a year and a half with no points. And I thought he was awesome. Easily, for me, the Full Beans Award winner.
Oh, there you go. Congratulations.
Congratulations,
Mick Schumacher. Do you think he's more excited about the points or the Full Beans Award?
When I call him and tell him, I think he's going to be a little shocked, a little humbled.
Yeah, I agree.
A little humbled, but, they always are.
I will say this. I say this all the time when we're talking about NBA teams and just the how they look out there, both on the court and all the stories you're hearing from the locker room and hanging out. The vibes are immaculate right now, I feel like, with Haas.
Yeah.
Does it not feel that way? Like,
oh,
with both
totally.
Of their drivers, with the team, obviously having some success now. And like, we sort of touched on it briefly, but yeah, like, even Mick in the sprint race, holding off Hamilton there and getting the help there from his teammate there for DRS. That's, I don't know. They're clicking right now.
They are clicking right now. They're super happy. I think that, Mick is feeling a lot better. He's looking like the guy we always thought he could be, after his success in F3 and F2. Kevin Magnussen, honestly, looks like a guy reborn. For a guy who fell out of the sport and kind of out of thin air, just got a second chance, seems so cool and calm and collected and happy and just like happy to be there and having fun racing, kind of new lease on life, which is awesome. And honestly, I just think the team, let's be real. I think if you were inside Haas the last two seasons, it was awful. I think it was really demoralizing. I think it really sucked to just be totally out of every race before the race even started. And I think the team is feeling great. Yeah, I'm pumped for them. It's like, it's great that they're back in it. So.
Any other final notes on past weekend's race?
The only thing I'll say is that this, it's bittersweet. It's kind of like, is this a glass half full or glass half empty thing? The glass half empty version of this is, my gosh, think about all the races Ferrari has thrown away and think about where they could be in this title fight if retiring from the lead in Azerbaijan and Barcelona or having the strategic errors in Silverstone and Monaco and other places hadn't cost them these races, where might they be in the title fight right now?
Right.
It's frustrating to think about. The glass half full version is, you know what? This car has got serious pace. They are figuring it out. It is no longer clear that the Red Bull is the fastest car out there. That is just not definitively true any longer. And there's a lot of races left. We're only halfway through the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, could they work their way back into this title fight? I feel way more optimistic about that chance than I did 3 or 4 weeks ago, where I thought,
listening to No Breaks.
Way,
yeah, you were ready. You were basically saying it's a wrap.
I was throwing it out. This is a wrap. And I think if anything, the one takeaway should be, it's like at three different points this season, we've called it a wrap. We should stop in different directions.
It's
we
just
stop
like the NBA
that.
Season with the MVP
that.
Race, which is like it's over in week three, and then by week five, we're saying, now it's over for another guy.
Yeah, we need to stop declaring that the season is over until somebody has actually finished with the most points, because we've had a tendency to do that, and we're proving ourselves wrong repeatedly.
Right, so it's a good lesson learned. Well, we're far from over here on No Breaks on today's show. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, a lot of F1 news. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there is a lot.
Felt like
there
was more than normal.
We're only Wednesday. It's a busy week.
So we'll get into all that and then start looking ahead to the next Grand Prix, which is in France. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Okay, back with No Breaks here in the Classic Factory. Slipstream chiming in on everything. I love to see it. Back and forth going on. Greg had a fun comment, though. He says, Haas, looking like the rock stars Gunther always knew they were.
Wow. Love
it. I'm excited for the next season of Drive to Survive with Haas performing well here. You know there's going to be a great Gunther episode about the team.
Yeah, They're the best part of Drive to Survive every year, good or bad.
It's true. The last one, he was like climbing a mountain, right?
Oh, yeah. He was in the Alps somewhere. And then he had the weird thing where he was like posing with the boat.
Well, yeah. That was great / depressing because it was like, oh my God, the stuff these guys have to do for some money here on this team.
We could kind of Drive and Survive, we could pivot to a more Hard Knock style where they just follow one team, but then that team is Haas everywhere. It's just like, I would just watch that much Haas content.
One thing we forgot to address from the race this past weekend was this crazy graphic that had everybody confused, including I saw Red Bull, tweeting about it. Like, what year is it here? We're showing it to everyone here on YouTube, but try and explain it for the listeners.
Okay,
here,
so there are – so on the race, you have your podium. You have Charles Leclerc, who drives for Ferrari in first. You have Max Verstappen, who drives for Red Bull in second. And you have Lewis Hamilton, who drives for Mercedes in third. You likely know those things I just said. However, the graphic has, for those of you listening, Sergio Perez, Ferrari driver in first, Carlos Sainz of Red Bull Racing in second, and Max Verstappen of Mercedes AMG in third. First of all, none of those people drive for any of those three teams. Only one of those people is even actually on the podium at this time, but that's not the correct team or place. I just don't even know how you get this so wrong.
Yeah, what
is great
here?
Though.
It's like, yeah, literally everything is wrong about it.
I kind of like literally what happened here. I'm interested in like how you make these sort of like on the fly graphics and like, cause you would never have these things pre-built because they don't exist. These people don't drive for those teams.
Yeah.
They don't. So
yeah,
how do you even,
how did it get
like,
there?
Like, how do you construct this graphic? And such that it could go this wrong.
Well, JD, you obviously worked on live television for a long, long time. You've been up there in the booth. It's hectic. Like, can you give us a possible explanation for this terrible graphic?
I mean, to be so wrong, the only thing I could think of is that it would be like a software engineer who has come into the truck and has been basically like, hey, this is all the things you can do. You can change the name of the guy, and this is where he drives for, and he's done like a weird demo, and it's still loaded in the machine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
for it
to be that wrong, it's just...
I think the fascinating part, but I think this is where we're getting to deciphering this, is great. And you think it's like, it just makes sense that the graphic would have the driver's name and then his team and the graphic and all that for who he races for. That would all be one thing.
But maybe it's a dynamic component.
I think so.
Like a lot, like all of those are dynamic fields.
I think
that
so.
Can be, because the colors of the guys' names also match the teams they're on.
Right.
Like Sergio Perez is in red, which is Ferrari's color, which it says he drives for.
Right.
Even though he's not in this picture. I mean, Sergio Perez I'm fascinated. I would just love to be in the truck to understand how exactly this comes together.
Look, they make a thousand correct graphics.
Fastest
sport you could possibly try and broadcast, and then we pick the one thing.
And there are tons of the data, actually, the amount of data they capture and the way they give it back to the fans is really impressive.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's really impressive. So I'm not hating. I'm like genuinely curious about the process.
I can only imagine the yelling in the track. Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, oh my god. Like I know we could fall down a rabbit hole here, but like even just like the added element of all the team radios and like them, you know, there is always you can tell the broadcast team are like they're interrupted basically by the team radio clip that they want to play. And there's a bunch of that.
Oh, that that's can I ask one question, JD?
Sure. I'll ask you.
As somebody who's directed live television, who's created a lot of television, what's the biggest kind of like on-screen blunder that you've ever been a part of? Like something that went really – something ever go really awry? Or is it something that maybe people didn't even notice? Sometimes I feel like they don't even notice and you're the only one who notices how badly it's going or something.
I mean, when LeBron James's name is spelled wrong, that popped in my – that happens a lot. Just the lowercase b – I've seen that a lot. Those are huge to me because they're so simple. Like that, that's a no-brainer. And he's, you know, arguably the greatest player of all time. You got to get that guy's name right on NBA TV. You know what I mean?
Okay, fair enough.
So there's that kind of thing. We've had things go off the rails before pretty badly.
We've had I mean, I can just remember instances where it's like, maybe I'm talking, but the camera is just still showing. The other camera is just showing you.
And
it's like, then you're just left looking at the camera. You're like, you don't want to say anything, of course. But like, there was one that went for a very long time. So you were obviously, something was going crazy up there that you didn't notice that program and all that was flipped or something like that.
That's it. Yeah, that's when you're TD. You find out if they like you or they don't like you, right? Because there's a guy sitting
director,
there. He's like, as he's on Trey, I'm just going to leave him on Trey. He hasn't said to move away from Trey.
Right. I mean, whereas clearly, someone that likes you will like, okay, I know this is wrong. I'm just going to go ahead and switch this.
So,
Okay,
there you go. Okay. So whoever that was
little,
that day.
That little back office politics with this TD.
I got a list of people who don't like me.
he's lying. This guy was like, I would sometimes before a starter show, it's because I was bored or whatever, I would wander up to to the booth, which like I mean it's like you gotta like it's up floor flights different, of stairs down this hallway you got it's a bit of a trek to get there. Just go in, see what's going on up here. These men and women loved JD. He was the coolest guy to work
fearless
for.
Leader.
And it was fun up there. I was like, I could see this being pretty fun.
It was for sure. Now it's just this. I've got my own little desk here, and that's it.
Yeah,
there used to be 10 people with me. Now it's just me. It's lonely back here. We got to get some crew back here.
And it's like now every mistake that happens is like you have no one else to blame.
100%
really?
Of it is on you.
That's true, but it was always on me, let's be honest.
Yeah,
usually
that's true.
It's my fault.
That's true. He would jump on them to take the blast, you know?
Somebody
spelled LeBron wrong, why that's his fault.
A great leader
is
a heat shield.
That's right.
Okay, let's get into some F1 news from this week. A couple that I can us all lump together, the headlines. Yeah. Silly season, I guess, has started at McLaren. And I'm going to butcher probably a lot of these names because I barely know the actual drivers' names, let alone all these people on the come up and stuff like that. I'll try my best. Yep. But McLaren has given Colton Herta a test drive. Do you want me to give them to you all at once here with McLaren?
Yeah, okay. Just run them all through because I think it's kind of one big.
Okay. And then we had Alpine driver Piastri.
Yep.
He is linked to McLaren. Yes. And so I, in a second, I think you'll tell me who the hell this guy even is. And then on top of all this, we had the CEO, Zach Brown. That I know who, that guy, because I saw him on Drive to Survive. He is saying these Piastri rumors of him like joining the team and all that with what's going on with Ricciardo are like, they're fake. He's under contract. Daniel is like, don't worry about it. So there's a lot of just like a lot of noise here around the struggling McLaren team.
There is. So Colton Herta, is a super high quality talent over here in the U.S. in Indy 500. Oscar Piastri is a, kind of a Formula 2 talent who now has come in as the Alpine reserve driver. Okay. There's other rumors flying around. Alex Albon has been credibly linked to the team as a possibility to take over as the number 2 driver there. All of this is just to say that the heat is on. Because Zach Brown's comments around this, I would say they're supportive but hardly ironclad. Sure. You know, he's said things like, well, you know, we expect, you know, we look forward to working with Danny, and we expect him to drive at the level of Lando and things like that. But frankly, he's not. You know, he's not. So it's a huge, I think there's huge question marks around the team. He is under contract for next year, and reportedly that is, it's a driver option, not a team option.
Yes, I saw
However,
that.
So seemingly, like, it's in his hands. However, there's almost always ways for the teams to get out of this, to eat some money, to do something. It's never that they can't make a move with their own team, you know, certainly. So it's that you've seen this in the past. I would be surprised if there's no out for McLaren if they feel they need to make a change. And these young guys, Herta and Piastri in particular, you know, they've been knocking on the door, and you know, there's serious interest here. I think Piastri's a more credible rumor than the Herta one, but there.
Why is that? Just because
I just think
one?
That, you know, Colton Herta, he did come over. He actually already did his test. It was this week, even since the news first broke. He did it. He loved driving the car. He is a supreme talent, but it is a little bit more of an unorthodox path to come from Indy 500 over to F1, at least, you know, in the modern age.
Are both these guys like really, really young? Like, are we like?
I mean, they're
19?
In there probably in their early 20s. Early 20s. I guess I don't know exactly, but they're, you know, they're in the early side of their career. Okay. And but Piastri has taken a very traditional path, Formula 3, Formula 2, you know, after Formula 2 championships, is now a reserve driver and looks poised to make the
leap. It's only a matter of time.
It makes poised to leave. Somebody's got to give this guy a shot. Alpine is definitely going to maneuver their way in. Piastri has been linked to Williams, which probably feels more credible because it seems a little bit less likely that Alpine and McLaren, as rivals right now, competing on the track, you know, neck and neck in the Constructors' Championship, will loan a driver out to one another. Mm. That would be, you know, in the same way you don't see.
So you're saying he's in the Alpine farm system.
Yeah,
so
basically, yeah. And they're going to they're trying to put him in drop him somewhere. Okay. So we'll see. But Danny Ric, for what it's worth, has said, listen, I'm not going anywhere. I intend to stay. He just announced that today. He put out a statement around it. I'm going to go on the record here as saying, I don't think he drives for McLaren next year.
Whoa.
I think he's out. I think he's not doing well enough. I think they'll find a way to get out of his contract and replace him. And to be honest, I think he could be out of the sport because I don't think somebody else will take a flyer on him at this point. It seems like each year has been worse than the one before for the last several years, kind of since he left Red Bull. I don't think his driving career is over. I could see him in Indy 500. I could even see him in NASCAR, as crazy as that seems. But it's there. But if I had to put money on it, I'd say I don't think he makes it for another year.
God.
Because he is a fan favorite.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a fan favorite. But
he's fallen off here.
He's fallen off big time.
Okay.
And there's a lot of young talent knocking on the door that wants in. And you know, it's a cutthroat sport. It's just people will only let you hang around so much because of, you know, memories fade fast. And, you know, team principals are only so sentimental. It's, you know, there's a lot of what have you done for me lately thinking in F1, like in every professional sport.
Yeah,
frankly.
That's true.
You know,
at least here this last race on Sunday. I mean, the time like he
oh it helps a lot. Yeah,
points,
yeah. I'm not saying it's unsalvageable. Start getting in the points. He did win a race last year. That's McLaren's first race win in a very long time.
Right.
You know, and that was after a start of the season that was very rough as well. So if he has a great, strong ending to the year, he could easily salvage all of this and head into 2023 with a lot of momentum. But I'm not confident that will happen, is what I'm saying.
Okay. We will see. Next headline here. We've sort of known this for a while, I feel like. Even I've known this for a while, but it's official. This was a headline, you won't believe it, but from the UK. It was controversial former F1 race director Michael Massey has left the FIA to move back to Australia months after his error cost Lewis Hamilton the chance of an eighth world title.
His error cost Lewis Hamilton. That's so...
What's it called? Like the Daily Mail UK or something that? That's where I saw it. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. They're leaning into this headline. Not a fan of him after what happened.
Editorializing there.
Yeah, just
as much as I kind of agree, it's still like, I don't know, it's definitely... It's not the most straightforward newsy way you could announce his departure.
But he's gone. Anything
he is gone.
To to note on this?
I mean, other than it's just kind of funny to see the culmination here, because he was, there was a 2 week or period where somehow Michael Massey, a name that I think a lot of fans probably didn't know at the start of the 2021 season, was the main character, like, yeah, one of the, yeah, main characters of the sport, was as big of a, like some playoff ref that, like, your team can never win against or something like that, right? Like, and it becomes an obsession of fans.
Yep.
You know, they, like, he became that guy that kind of haunted Mercedes fans. They always had just said he would, I will say, I always suspected this would happen, but they had said they would place him somewhere else and he would have another job with the FIA. So I was super curious, what would that be? And, like, what could you place him in that wouldn't be controversial? And it turns out there was no such plan. Really. That was never going
to
be the thing.
That's just to slow roll it, right?
Yeah, and just
not,
like,
not to say, like, you messed up, man. You're out of here.
Yeah, I think it helps him deflect blame and be like, this guy's not responsible because we didn't make any – we're not firing him. He didn't make a mistake. We're just moving him to this quietly the corner. You know,
he just wants
to
go back to Australia, be with his family.
Totally, right.
Classic move.
Classic.
I was going to ask you, before him, in knowing his name and what went down, like, did we ever know F1 race director?
So,
like,
Charlie Whiting was the race director before him. And I will say that the thing about Charlie Whiting was, is that he was kind of a legend. He had been in the role for a long time. He was incredibly well respected across the sport. Would a casual fan have known him? It kind of depends on almost what you mean by casual. Would, like, an American style, like, I watch Drive to Survive and I've only been in this for a couple of years. You know, no, you probably weren't, like, super into Charlie Whiting. Would a long-standing, maybe European fan? Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, but it's the, but he was super well respected. He was kind of a legend of the sport, and then he passed away and Michael Massey took over, which I think made everything that happened with Massey all the more intense, because he was following in the footsteps of this guy that was universally respected.
And quite suddenly too, right?
Yeah. Because so it's away, yeah, and he did through. So it's, that's all, I think that has made, that made Massey's job all the harder, because it's like, you know, it's really hard to follow up in a role where everybody said, well, this guy's done a terrific job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no complaints, and then it's like, okay, how do you follow that up? It's hard.
So who's doing it right now?
It's actually a pair.
Is it a team?
They've shifted it to where there's different people on different weeks. They've restructured a lot of elements of it to try to, like, basically control for what happened last year. You've seen a lot of changes in the way races are managed. We mentioned one earlier with the way that they're dealing with off-track violations, but whether it's ordering people on track to do things. Massey was a big fan of that, right? You used to see Massey calling in and saying, give the place back.
Oh, yeah.
They no longer do that anymore. You can give the place back, but you've got to, like, make a judgment call and take the risk of, I can either keep driving and suffer the penalty, or I'll give it back now. They're not going to call in and say, hey, we think you committed a penalty. You know, you should do this. There's both ways in which they're intervening more and intervening less.
Right.
And, like, a lot of things are changing there. And I would say that it's not as if everybody's now thrilled with it. There's tons of complaints coming out of the various paddocks about it, but it's like, that's also, I mean, these people love to complain.
It's a sport full of complainers. I will miss the team principal saying, Michael.
The cutting, I do. It is a good thing that they cut down on the principals trying to influence the race director's decisions.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And, like, them calling and, like, trying to say, you need to do this, you need to do that. That was way too much politics involved there. However, it made for great television.
And it would, like,
insane.
I was trying to think, like, you could, like, implement it in the NBA, like, when they go to Secaucus to, like, the referee.
Have the coaches get to call in.
We get to hear them call in, you know?
The coaches get to call in and give their take on it.
Yeah, you got Daryl Morey on the phone.
I guess you see that in the sense that you do see coaches, players, you know, talking with refs. This was always a thing. As I think people who listen to the pod know, I'm a Spurs fan, and you used to always see, like, back in our glory days, every time, every break, Tony Parker was over on the side, like talking to
the refs.
Not like angry mad, just like kind of putting little bugs in their ear, kind of moving the needle with them. And then suddenly fouls start to go their way. And it's like, you know, the black magic is working. But I think a lot of that still happens pre and post race.
Okay.
So,
final headline here, bit of a weird one. Former Formula One boss Bernie Ecclestone charged with fraud over assets worth £400 million. And this guy, now he's worth £2.5 billion. He, well, you know what? I could just say $2.5 million at this point, right? Or $1 billion at this point. You see?
Yeah, because it's well, it's pounds,
oh,
not euros.
Euro.
It's
not
pounds,
euro.
Not
hold
euros.
On, hold
pounds,
on. Sorry.
Not euros. Yeah.
You know what? The reason that happened, I was at trivia last night, and we got asked a question about beer consumption,
okay,
per capita in the European Union, and we had a big brain fart thinking England was in the European Union.
Oh,
anyway, it was a mess. Yeah, that's why I think I have that on the brain still.
Crushing.
Anyway,
crushing.
I was going to say
Hold on. What was the answer?
Oh, geez. It was like a bonus question, final bonus question.
Yeah, okay.
And it was so it was name the top 10 countries in the part of the European Union that consume the most beer per capita.
Oh, and you named the UK.
So we had
one.
The UK in there.
Right.
We just, you know, and we weren't the only ones apparently. There was a bunch.
You got like, Brexited.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. and we really screwed up. I'm not up to speed on my European Union
country. Who's
countries.
In the union? It's actually more
complicated. Oh my God.
Than
hey,
you think.
Here's your answer for everyone moving forward. If you go to bar trivia, just think of the IAs. All those IA countries. A lot of them are
Estonia,
in it. Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It goes on and on and on. So,
wow.
And they were a lot of the answers.
Right.
There was
they're beer drinking people.
I guess so.
Sure.
I was going to say, oh, this old guy, Bernie, 91 years old. And he's
maybe did a crime.
Fraud. Yes. He is said to have concealed millions that were uncovered during a complex and worldwide investigation by Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. Sounds like a movie. So what do we know about this old
What
guy?
Do we know about Bernie Ecclestone? Bernie, I'll just put it plainly. Bernie sucks.
Okay.
I mean, he is like a big racist, kind of like pseudo-fascist weirdo who ran
loves,
the sport
He loves
for
Putin.
Years.
I saw that.
He said he would take a bullet for Putin.
Yeah.
Back in the day when he ran the sport, he said a bunch of like flattering things about Hitler one time, which feels like the easiest. If there's like one person who it's like, just don't make a complimentary remarks about Hitler. It's like a very basic
a
PR.
Yeah.
Like a very basic PR 101. You know, but he was unable to do that. He said he hates Lewis Hamilton and always disparages him and praises Michael Schumacher. Almost everybody feel is, you know, absolutely a race-based commentary.
Sure.
He really sucks. So for me, I don't like the guy. So for me, when I saw him like getting, you know, charged with fraud, I mean, there was some Schadenfreude in there. I was like, this guy is awful. I'm glad he's getting some comeuppance. I'm going to be frank about it. It's like, I don't like the guy. I mean, I don't like the guy.
The only other note I saw in this article, he owns a Swiss mountain. Okay.
Yeah, he,
I didn't know he could do that.
Yeah,
I own
what
that.
Does that even
That's
mean?
Mine.
Yeah,
that
I
mountain's
guess,
mine.
Yeah.
He owns a Brazilian coffee plantation. He owns a fleet of private jets. He's got a $30 million yacht. That's not a shock.
He used to have a different yacht, but he sold it to his good buddy Eric Clapton, their friend.
Serious?
Yeah. His old yacht is now Eric Clapton's yacht because they're buddies.
And then he used to also have, used to be the owner, I guess, of Queens Park Rangers Football Club. That was one of his assets there for a couple years.
It was for a while.
This guy's just an old fart. This guy, a racist old fart. He's got way too much money. And
he was like,
caught.
At some point, he was like, hey, I want to keep more of my money, so I'm going to hide it from the government. And then they were like, no, you're not.
You don't need to do that when you have $2.5 billion. You really don't.
That's how I always feel. Also, when you're like 91 years old, like, what are you, like, you could go about, you could try to spend $100 million a year for the rest of your life, and you wouldn't do it because you'd die before you ran out of money. It's like why do it?
I don't know. This guy sucks.
Yeah,
all
he
right.
sucks.
I'll tell you, someone who does not suck, a friend of the program, you guys had her on, Hazel Southwell.
Hazel does not suck. She's great.
She has a great tweet going around the last couple of days. I wanted to ask Graydon, I wanted to ask everybody in the Slipstream, everybody listening for your answers. I asked Nora. She thought this was very difficult, so Hazel was right here. It is, if you had to be an F1 driver, but an existing driver, so you get their life, etc. Which one would it be? I reckon this one is quite a lot harder than it looks. Do you agree with Hazel? Was this tough for Graydon Gordian, or did you have an answer just like that?
I didn't have an answer just like that. In fact, I almost have. But one thing I want to point out about Hazel's tweet, my favorite thing about being an F1 fan is the weird time these tweets come in, because that's at like 6:40 a.m. she tweets that, and it gives the impression that, that she's just like up thinking about that, like first thing in the morning. She lives in England, it's a horrible time, but I always love
that's a lunch like, the false, for
yeah,
Hazel,
the false impression you get that like I've just woken up, but like I'm thinking like which F1 driver's life would I want to have at, like before I've even had my coffee. But I think first of all, we're meaning like flash forward, like right now, like I'm trading live.
I think so. That's how I took it. And for all like maybe what they do on the track, I think even more importantly, what's going on off the track.
I started thinking more off the track.
Yeah, the fame of popularity. Is that good?
Okay,
is that bad?
I'm going to go with Charles Leclerc. Okay. I mean, he's my guy. So of course people think that, but it's like, he does have a fairy tale life. He like grew up in Monaco. He's like a young man. He's a driver for Ferrari, which, you know, has a lot of pressure, but a lot of perks. Everywhere you go, they've got a Ferrari for you there to drive around and all these tailored suits. And he, you know, he's worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars in his, you know, mid 20s. And you know, I think he just lives just a fairy tale lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and he seems to me like more, as far as the guys at the top of the grid, I would never say Max, who, you know, A, seems a little joyless, but like whose dad is kind of an asshole, right? And I wouldn't want to have to deal with all the time. So it's like, you know, in general, I think, so to me, it's like, maybe that's not going to surprise people given I'm a fan of his, but it does feel like Charles has like hit the lottery on like things that are going right for me as a young person.
It's not a surprise to me or anyone that knows Graydon, and especially his wife Taryn, that you went with Charles Leclerc, because Taryn finds Charles
she finds him quite handsome.
Yes, he is.
Our wives in general are big fans of the Ferrari team.
That's right. They are
there for different reasons than I am. What is your answer?
Well, I struggled with it. Like Lewis Hamilton, sure. If you want to be like, I want to be the best.
Yeah,
the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Now with that comes like, oh my God, you probably can't go anywhere. Like I was trying to think, like Lewis Hamilton walking around Atlanta.
Yeah.
Is he being stopped left and right by people?
It's a good question.
But I'll tell you, Charles Leclerc is not.
No, I think that's probably right. I do think, or like, you know, like a Pierre Gasly is not.
No,
or like someone, you know, you can kind of fade into the background.
Yeah.
They used to talk about this. The drivers used to talk about how much they loved the U.S. because they could come here and party and live luxurious lifestyles, but disappear. It's like you could have a beautiful apartment in New York and go to great restaurants and live, and nobody would have any idea who you were. You actually hear soccer players say the same thing sometimes. It's like they come over and they just kind of disappear.
Yeah.
So, and I do think that's eroding a little bit. Lewis has got to be the guy for whom it has eroded the most.
He's
got to be the most recognizable face in the sport on this side of the pond, right? So,
but I think when it's all said and done, like he's still got, of course, racing left in him. He's going for his eighth and all that, and where he'll fall in the pecking order of greatest of all time. But like what he's done off the track as well, like I think that's going to only just age better. But like this guy's like a game changer in the sport.
Totally. He's a voice for a bunch of great causes.
Yeah.
He's super interesting, involved in like fashion and philanthropy and you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts and all sorts of things that are cool. You know, probably him and Vettel are right up there at the very top of the sport in terms of being strong voices around climate change. They do cool stuff. I do think you're right. Lewis will go down as somebody who, you know, his aspiration, I'll say that, is to go down as somebody whose legacy is about far more than
just
racing.
Exactly. So. But then again, he's the most popular, and if you don't want to be like stopped everywhere you go, that's going to be tough.
It's not a bad choice by
sure. No, sure.
But not to mention Lewis is probably, I mean, not to say it's all about the dollars and the cents, but I presume Lewis's lifestyle is bananas.
Yeah. And he's got a dog. I know some of these other guys have dogs, I'm sure,
yeah,
but I saw they had a camera on, is it Rocco?
Rocco is
Yeah, they
is
put
the name
a camera
of the
on him.
Okay.
And then so we got his point of view.
What was
You know
Rocco?
What? I'm changing my answer. I want to be Rocco.
Oh, wow. I like that. Yeah,
now I'm hanging out with Lewis all the time. Yeah. I can go wherever I want. Yeah. I mean, everybody's like, everybody's super pumped to see me.
Totally.
Yeah.
You just jet around the world on a private jet, but with real no expectations.
I just struggle to get up and down stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. With short legs on this
day. Yeah, there's always a... Anyway. There's always a catch.
Okay. Well, let's hear from you. Your answers. Great tweet there from Hazel. If you had to be an F1 driver, and it has to be an existing driver, but you're getting their life and all that, who are you picking and why? Let us know right now in the slipstream, in the comments below this video, or tweet them in at NoDunksInc. We're going to take our final break. But when we come back, we will look at the overall standings, both with the drivers and the constructors, and we'll look ahead to the French Grand Prix, and you can tell me everything I need to know to get ready for this race in a couple weeks.
To get prepped.
All right. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, back with No Breaks. Start wrapping up this bad boy. Quick look at the driver's standings.
Here we go.
Because the real question from this, as we show it to you here, and Max at 208 points overall, Charles Leclerc at 170, is he back in the hunt? You said it was over a couple weeks ago. Now, earlier you said, I don't know. But, like, I saw people in the slipstream saying, come on, it's still honestly over. Red Bull just too consistent. Max too good. And Charles, because of reliability, because of, strategy reasons, left a lot of points out there on the board in these last couple of races prior to this one. But what do you think? Can he do it?
I mean, I think that Max and Red Bull should still be the overwhelming favorites to win. I just think that this is the longest season in Formula One history. There are more points out there to be scored than any season before. So a 38-point lead is, only so big. You know, it just last week, Perez was ahead of Leclerc in the standings, and now he is 19 points ahead of Perez.
Right.
So it's like I think that there's a lot of points to be gained. You know, one week, Leclerc comes in first. Max has something where he DNFs. You know, it's a 25-point swing. And he's right back in it. That being said, it's like, should Max be the favorite? It's like, yes, of course. Of course he should be. I just think it's, we're going from... It's mathematically plausible to the scenarios in which it could happen feel less and less... like wild, crazy anomalies.
Does Ferrari as a team really in the second half of the season just need to like zero in and focus on it's Leclerc and Carlos, everything you can do to help him? Like that has to be
I think so. At some point you've got to turn the corner and you've got to say, listen guys, this is, one of us is in a race for the world title and one of us isn't, and we've got to get serious about this. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably right. I think that they've also, the one thing they've got to do more than anything, I think, is, so that's the strategic clarity, but then it's also reliability, right? It's like they need to be doing, the car is fast. They need to be doing everything to make sure that it finishes. In order to finish first, you got to first finish, right? So
you must have came up with that.
I'm the first guy to say that. Yeah, yeah. And I want you to all cite me.
Put it on a fridge.
Yeah. So I'm. No one has ever said that before. So I think that needs to be their focus. But is the slipstream team right in some other broader sense? Like Max, it should be the overwhelming favorite to win the world title.
Let's take a look at the constructor standings. Red Bull sitting atop the standings right now, 359. Ferrari right there, I guess, at 303. You got Mercedes in third at 237. And then obviously a massive drop-off, but we got a race there that's exciting between McLaren and Alpine and sort of Alfa Romeo like hanging around sort of for that 4, 5, 6 spot. Anything that jumps out at you here?
I mean, the one thing I say is it's the gap is starting to reopen between Ferrari and Mercedes, which, you know, is for me is unsurprising, but I think probably disappointing to some who are hoping that Mercedes could get in the race for second. But you know, the Alpine McLaren one is the best part about this, you know, these standings, right? Is that that's neck and neck halfway through the season, and there's a lot to play for. So that's hopefully very exciting. The other thing that jumps out at me here, fan favorite Haas, all the way up in sixth. I mean, that is like that's exciting. It's cool. I'm pumped for them, and they, you know, hopefully they can keep scoring points and maybe get up and, you know, even challenge some people a little bit ahead of them. So
before we look at the French Grand Prix, what else are you watching for in the second half of the season? Obviously, you know, can Ferrari and Charles Leclerc like catch Max? That's number one. Yeah, but is there like and that little race that you pointed out there between Alpine and McLaren? But is there anything else that you're really like zeroing in on for these final 11 races?
Yeah, so I mean, and a few of them we've already alluded to, but I think so. One is Alpine has looked like the faster team. They've looked like they've got the better car on track than McLaren, but as you can see from the standings, they haven't turned it into points. So can they, you know, get rid of the gremlins, you know, tighten up the operations and start bringing the car home and putting more points on the board and really take control of fourth? I think that's got to be, because right now the car looks awesome and they look like they've really done the work to prep for these new regs. So can they do that? Two, you know, on the flip side of that, McLaren has looked shaky. The vibes are bad. We mentioned the vibes are good at Haas. The vibes are bad at McLaren. And like, are they just hanging on by a thread here? Are they getting lucky, or are they like on the precipice of really getting back in this fight? And what's the rest of Danny Ric's year look like?
Right.
I think it's probably the thing we're really laser focused on. Nobody questions Lando's stance with the team and the fact that he's the number one guy and he's probably out driving the car at this point. You know, for me, it's can Haas keep scoring points? Can Mick keep it up? I'm really curious to see what Alex Albon can do. He had some really great races. He had a really shaky one. Then, you know, following that, you know, at Silverstone, he didn't look as good in qualifying and things like that, right? Even when they brought some upgrades to the car. So, but a lot of people are talking about the Williams seats maybe being up for grabs. Latifi is likely out, or at least a lot of people are presuming he are, but some people are talking about both those seats being open, maybe because Albon might make a move. Where is that move? I think, but he's probably got to keep performing at a high level to, you know, to earn whether it's another season there or another seat somewhere else. So these are all stuff to follow, but hopefully what it all says is we can inch our way back to genuine intrigue at the very top of the standings.
Right.
That's got to be the number one hope for the second half of the season.
All right, well, let's look ahead to our next race. JD's got the circuit here for us, which I love. It's one of my favorite things, just looking at these things.
Oh, yeah, they're cool.
You know, just like where the DRSs are and obviously how many turns we're talking here. So we're talking about the French Grand Prix. This is Sunday, July 24th. So not this coming weekend, but the next. I guess it's the circuit Paul Ricard in Le Castellet, France, which is near the French Riviera.
It is.
Right?
It's pretty far south of France.
Yeah. So 53 laps on this one, 2 DRS zones, as you see there, and I guess some brightly colored runoff areas.
Yeah, this is nice that track that has the big, beautiful red, white, and blue stripes all around it.
I like that.
You know, so it's cool looking.
What else do we need to know about this track?
Yeah, okay, so it's an interesting one. So this is one of the more balanced tracks of the year in the sense that there's a good mix of low, medium, and high speed corners. So it's, to be honest, it's probably famously not the most exciting track. This has got a bit of a bad reputation for some boring races.
Really?
Yeah, it does. However, it is a track that the drivers are very familiar with, or a lot of them are, because it is one of the main testing tracks, or has historically been over the years, maybe a little bit less so in recent years, but a lot of teams have at least spent a lot of time here because it's so balanced and because it kind of doesn't aggressively skew one way or the other, right? Where it gives a huge advantage to teams that are, you know, that have a bunch of engine power or run really high downforce packages or whatever they might be, whatever you might have. So it's very balanced, which I think is exciting because I think it'll show a really true – we'll come out of next weekend with a very clear sense of where I think the cars are at, you know, about halfway through the year. It's like this is a very complete – full picture of where they're at. So is it, I mean, of course, there could be shenanigans, weird things, but if you get a fairly clean race, is also a fairly clear picture of the pace of the respective cars. You get that at France.
Who does this favor then between the teams at the top, if you had to pick?
You know, I would have said it favors Red Bull historically, just because I would have said that they have the slightly just more optimized car. But in recent weeks, I've started to question that. You know, I would have said that about Austria as well, and I would have said that about Silverstone as well. So tracks that I would have thought favored Red Bull haven't shown themselves. You know, Red Bull hasn't been winning at. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like I do think it's a bit of a toss up. It's a bit of a 50-50. I do think some of it'll come down to like nailing the actual package that they bring to it, finding the balance in the car, because that's where I think they're struggling. That was really the gremlins that Red Bull was facing this last weekend, right? Is that they didn't? I think they were just off on the setup, and it was costing them tire degradation issues, and then that's what really cost them the race, was the deg, right? So it's like, it's similarly, it's like it's not even about the car itself, it's like there's a bunch of decisions they'll make between now and qualifying that I do think will determine who wins.
Can't wait. Before we let you go, final question. I know we're running long here, but I don't get to do this often, you know?
Yeah,
fill in for Trey on No Breaks. What has been the best race so far from this season as we hit this halfway point of the 11 races in 2022?
Great question. The answer is probably Silverstone, which was really exciting, right? And people loved in the last five laps, of which are probably the best five laps of the season. You know, Silverstone was really great. I think there's a couple of earlier season races that we're a little bit prone to forget because we have, you know, short memories. Jeddah in particular was really awesome. The last few laps and the battle between Leclerc and Verstappen, which Verstappen ended up coming out on top of, were really terrific as well. So those to me jump out as really exciting races that are probably the highlights of the season so far. But I've got to go with Silverstone, I think, if I had to say.
Let's hear from you guys. Agree or disagree with Graydon Gordian on the best race of the season so far? Let him know. Tweet at him. At Mr. Gordian. Mr. Gordian. That's the best way people can get in touch with Graydon. So go ahead and tweet at him. Subscribe to No Breaks here on YouTube. Leave your boys a 5-star rating and review.
5 stars.
Yes, wherever you listen to the podcast. Send us some F1 emails. Don't be afraid to do that. Send them to nodunks@theathletic.com. You can tweet them in at nodunksinc. And make sure you subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/nodunks so they know that we sent you. Clipper Bros? Yeah, Clipper Bros.
You heard it first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
I heard the music, so I wasn't sure if we could do both at the same time, but Clipper Bros sounds great with that track underneath, right? Yes. Stay speedy, people, and embrace the fun run. What?
Well,
I meant to say embrace the turn.
I love it. I mean...
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.